you know, for me, the seminal moment like that, the seminal magic moment in a movie was the moment in Wizard of Oz when the screen changes from black and white to color when the house touches down. And
hello and welcome back to the First Crack Podcast. I am your host, Garrick Van Buren. On each episode, I like to bring you a conversation with somebody interesting. And today I have just such a conversation for you. This is the 52nd First Crack Podcast, and it is with David Orenstein, partner at the Minneapolis law firm Parson and Kaplan Rosberg and Gottlieb. And this is the second of six conversations I'm having with the partners and staff of that law firm on their life's passions. Today, specifically, we're talking movies and film, and David and I talk about his attendance at the 7th annual Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival and what he screened there and what he would have liked to have seen there. And in the show notes, you will see David's sort of David's picks. What do we got here? Like seven, three, six, half a dozen films that if you haven't seen, you should. There are a couple on there that are some of my favorites also. Let me know what you think of the show. Drop me an email, firstcrack@gmail.com. Or post a comment at the First Crack Podcast website, firstcrackpodcast.com. You'll find this show and, that's right, 51 previous conversations. So with that, let's get started. You just came back from Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. Yes. In Champaign-Urbana.
Yes, and it was a fabulous experience. It was a marathon movie-watching session. I didn't stay for the whole thing because I had to get back for a religious holiday. I'm Muslim, and no, actually I'm Jewish, and I had the Passover holiday. And so if the people from the Overlooked Film Festival, wherever to listen to this, I would encourage them in the future not to schedule the film festival over Passover, because I would love to have stayed for the whole 4 days, but three movies a day and sandwiched between the movies, lots of discussions, panel discussions, commentary on the movies that we watched from the directors, the writers, the actors. Jason Patrick was there. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, who was in After Dark, My Sweet, and Rush. And Mario Van Peebles was there, who has been in a number of movies, including Badass, which was one of the movies at the festival. So we heard a lot about the movies, and we saw a lot of movies.
And tell me about the movies that stood out for you, the ones that made an impression that you were able to catch.
You know, I really liked the movie Murder Ball, which I think
an intriguing concept.
Yeah, it's at the theaters now, and the concept is wheelchair rugby, and you have these quadriplegics or paraplegics with various degrees of disability. I mean, I remember one had literally had no legs and no arms below his forearm, who are strapped into these reinforced wheelchairs. And they play rugby, and it's very much a full contact sport. They get knocked over on the wheelchairs. That's why they're heavily reinforced. And the object of the game, the rules are pretty simple from what I can tell. It's just you can hold the ball for 10 seconds, provided that you are dribbling it. And at that point, you have to either pass it or you cross the finish line or the goal line. And, those are basically the rules. It's a documentary about these people who compete in this sport, and it is really a very, very intense movie. I mean, I've seen a lot of sports documentaries, and you wouldn't think this would be as interesting, or they wouldn't be as competitive, but these are jocks. You know, before they were injured, they were jocks, and after they were injured, they're still jocks. And there are Olympics, paraplegic Olympics, and this follows the team all the way up to the top level, and gets some incredible inside footage, including footage at a hospital when one of the players has a heart attack. You see the monitor and the bleeping of the monitor. I mean, I don't know how they could have gotten that, but really a powerful, engaging movie.
And you had a chance to meet Roger Ebert.
I met Roger. I'll just call him Roger. Yeah, I don't really know him. Raj, as I like to call him. Now, Roger is from the Champaign-Urbana area, and so a lot of these people knew him and, you know, kind of treated him very familiarly, and he you know, kind of reciprocated that. I mean, he was very approachable, and but I met him and shook his hand and got his autograph and talked to him briefly, and it was quite a thrill for me as a regular watcher of Siskel and Ebert back when it was Siskel and Ebert, more than a regular watcher, like an obsessive watcher of Siskel and Ebert, to meet this guy who, even though he was somewhat deflated, I mean, he's kind of lost a lot of weight. I think he's been ill, so he was, you know, not quite as physically formidable as I was expecting. It was a big thrill to actually meet him and talk to him.
And you had mentioned you made some recommendations for an upcoming, for the next Overlooked that you thought should be included.
I did. What I would include, I have two movies that are my favorite movies that I think qualify as overlooked. Although I'll tell you, the definition of overlooked was pretty broad at the film festival and included movies that, when we saw Phantom of the Opera, the original silent version, and no one could say that's an overlooked movie, but I suppose, you know, you can stretch and say it's an overlooked genre these days, silent movies, and we saw it with the benefit of live instrumental accompaniment, a live orchestra, and that really, I mean, that made the picture so much fun, more fun to watch than if you know rented it and watched it on TV. Seeing it in this beautiful theater, the Virginia Theater, kind of an old Baroque style theater, with live accompaniment on a big screen, with Lon Chaney, you know, at the center of the movie. It was really a fun experience, whether it's an overlooked movie or not. But what I would recommend is the movie The Thiermann, which I know you've heard of and you feel the same way that I do about it. We talked before, a movie about the inventor of the instrument, the Thiermann, he's a Russian electrical engineer whose name is Thiermann. And whether you know it or not, everyone has heard the instrument, the Thiermann, because it became kind of standard in the musical background of science fiction movies, and you can hear it in the Beach Boys recording of Good Vibrations. It has kind of an eerie electric sound. It goes in Good Vibrations. Ooh, we're talking about good vibrations. Da 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 da. And you hear that. Ooh, that's a Thiermann. And it's played by moving your hand through an electromagnetic field, moving it up and down to change the pitch and side to side to change the volume. And the story of how that gets invented and how Hollywood latches onto it for certain kinds of, you know, B movies, basically, and the ambition of this Russian engineer that the instrument be used for classical performances is really a fascinating story. And the instrument, when it's played well, by the way, does sound like sort of like an electrified cello. It's just a beautiful, beautiful sound. And that would be reason enough, I think, to show the movie. But on top of that, you have this love story between Thiermann and a woman who I don't think he ever marries, but is very devoted to. And she, by the way, becomes the foremost performer on the Thiermann. They become separated when the KGB detains him in Russia. I think they actually pick him up in America and bring him back to the Soviet Union. So they're separated, and then eventually through just this series of amazing events that you wouldn't believe if it were not a documentary, they're reunited. It is such a glorious love story, and it's just a fascinating musical story. So I would recommend that for my first movie. And it might be, you know, you can't, the problem with these old movies in the Overlook Film Festival is you have to figure out some way to include or incorporate some sort of live component, because what's offered by this festival is not only a movie watching experience, but an opportunity to hear from the people who were associated with the movie. The Thiermann is about, it's got to be 25 years old. But what I would do is I would, Roger, if you're listening, I would have a Thiermann brought in and a player, and after the movie, I would feature a concert on the Thiermann. I think people would like that. So that would be movie number one. And then movie number two, that not many people, I think, have seen is Miss Congeniality. No, I'm just kidding. is Happiness, which is strangely similar in its title, I guess, to Miss Congeniality, but a very different movie. It's a very, very dark, dark comedy, maybe the darkest I've ever seen, by Todd Solondz, who also made my other favorite movie of his is Welcome to the Dollhouse. If you haven't seen that, that's
one I wasn't able to get through myself.
Oh, really? Yeah, it takes kind of a bizarre turn at the end, but I really liked it. That's a movie about, you know, the title is a deeply ironic title. I mean, it's a movie about unhappy, desperately unhappy people who are all what you'd consider to be nerds isn't even strong enough, I guess, social outcasts for one reason or another, including, extreme sexual deviance. It's a movie that breaks a lot of taboos and deals with these subjects in a way, as I've said, that actually is in a very, very dark way funny. But Todd Solondz doesn't make these characters monsters, as you might expect. And that's what's so interesting about it, is even the most despicable characters are in some ways ambiguous characters. You actually find things about them that are somewhat redeeming or admirable, or at least I did. And by the end of the movie, and it's not a sentimental movie at all, it doesn't romanticize this, but by the end of the movie, in an odd way, you sort of identify with these characters who are only looking for what we're all looking for in life, which is a way to fit in and to love, someone to love and someone to be loved by. It really is it's a movie that really got under my skin, that stayed with me for a long time. I saw it maybe 7-8 months ago, and it has two absolutely powerhouse performances at the core of the movie, as well as, you know, these other elements that I think are so interesting and exceptional about it. So I would recommend those two movies. And boy, if they could get Todd Solondz to actually appear at the festival and speak, I would love to hear what goes on in this guy's mind. Those would be my two recommendations. Where do I go for movie criticism? Well, Ebert and Roper just isn't the same to me as Siskel and Ebert. I think what I like so much about Siskel and Ebert was the kind of the adversarial piece. You know, they would disagree and sometimes disagree sort of violently. I mean, the attacks would sort of turn personal, but also very literate. I mean, these are two such articulate, intelligent people who are clearly so knowledgeable about film and so passionate about it. I have no doubt that, you know, Roper loves movies, but the dynamic just isn't the same. I think maybe because Roper seems to be a much younger man, he's spirited and he's kind of spunky, but Roger Ebert is kind of the elder statesman on the show, and so there's a kind of an uneven give and take. That for me, it just doesn't quite have what the old Siskel and Ebert dynamic had going for it. So I don't. I still listen to it. I now, rather than watching it on TV, I found I can just listen to it at the Ebert and Roper website, which is much more convenient. And I don't feel like I miss a whole lot by not having the visual. So now, I go to print for movie criticism. I like The New Yorker. I like their reviews. And I've been reading more books about movies, which doesn't give me necessarily reviews of contemporary movies, but it sort of deepens and enriches my enjoyment of movies because I understand more about the history and the art form. And one I would recommend is The Story of Film, which is a kind of a heavyweight book by a British film critic who has a TV show in England that's slipping my mind, but The Story of Film is a good, comprehensive history of movies and the cultures, not only in the United States, but all over the world in which these different movies arose.
You're listening to the First Crack Podcast with Garrick Van Buren. I'm talking today with David Orenstein, and we're talking about movies and film and what makes a good movie.
That's a pretty tough question. First, obviously, would be that J-Lo has to be in it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know. What makes a really good film? I mean, I think I'd have to answer it in more of a subjective way. What do I really enjoy about a film? Because I don't feel that I have the, I can't speak authoritatively on what makes a film a good film from a kind of absolute perspective. But what I like is a movie that challenges me, that, I have to work a little bit to figure it out. I mean, I don't want it to be too challenging or, to the point of being kind of incomprehensible to me, but I like a movie that makes me work a little bit. I like a movie that's unpredictable, that isn't just doesn't follow some standard formula, that surprises me. And after seeing a lot of movies, it's not easy to find a movie that surprises me. But they're out there, like Spirited Away by the Japanese animator is a movie that I thought was just constantly surprising. Crash, a new movie, had a lot of interesting, kind of provocative plot twists. So it's got to be unpredictable, challenging. Obviously, I like a script that is, a pretty literate script. I used to really like the movies of Paddy Chayefsky, who, was just an outstanding writer, maybe almost overly literate. His characters were almost hyper-articulate in Network, for example, but I liked that movie. And, good performances, actors that really seem like they're committed to the movie and they're, that the performances seem genuine and not, mailed in like Roger Ebert would say. So that's what I like about a movie.
David, when did your passion for film and movies really begin?
I should have mentioned magic when I went through the elements that I like about a movie, because that's sort of the element that is at the foundation of them all. I mean, that's what a movie offers. And I think, for me, the seminal moment like that, the seminal magic moment in a movie was the moment in Wizard of Oz when the screen changes from black and white to color, when the house touches down in Oz and Dorothy has this realization that, hey, it's not Kansas anymore. I remember that when it was, I'm old enough to remember black and white TV, when most shows, almost every show was made in black and white. And, Walt Disney was the only color TV show, and it was, and the opening would say, the Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color, which was really a big thing then, to see a color on your TV. And we didn't even have a color TV. And I remember going over to my neighbor's house to see the annual showing on TV of The Wizard of Oz. And, of course, the only place you could see it was on TV. This was back in the 60s, and you couldn't rent it, and it wasn't at the theaters. And there was this moment that was so stunning to me as a I was in the 60s, so I was like 1 year old at the time. I'm actually older than that. I was like 10. And when there was this change from black and white to color, and I had never seen color before on a TV, and the colors were so brilliant in The Wizard of Oz at that second where that transition occurs. It just, for me, was the embodiment of movie magic. That's kind of what I search for in a movie, is a movie that can transport me in that way, where that you're watching the screen where really anything can happen. That's the Spielberg movies, some of the moments in E.T. or Spirited Away is another good example. They have that magic, and it brings me back to this moment when I was a child and was just enchanted by that.
David, thank you, and thank you for sitting down with me a second time today and making room on your schedule to chat with me. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and it's big of you to admit that this was the second time and that you forgot to turn on the microphone the first time.
Hey, folks. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with David. I sure did both times, yes. That's right. The first time around, we chatted for 45 minutes before I realized the mic wasn't turned on. My apologies again to David, but also my gratitude for him continuing to chat with me and getting just as equally engaging conversation out the second time. So thank you, David. And thank you all for listening. Let me know what you think of the show, firstcrack@gmail.com for email. And comments, of course, can always be posted at firstcrackpodcast.com. Thank you and have a great day.